Woke up last night around 1 a.m., couldn't sleep for a couple hours, got on Instagram and saw that Courtney DeWalter had started the Barkley Marathons. I didn't really know what was going on. I thought it was always around April Fool's, but it's March 18, 2021. It's like 1 o'clock in the afternoon here in Bakersfield, California. So it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon there. And so I'm kind of going to just go through some of the Twitter tweets on this. Keith Dunn is the one guy I know is always out there and does some pretty good tweets. He says, he started off 13 hours ago, says, it's been raining heavily for the past several hours. Just as the conch is blown, we are starting to get a break in the rain. That's what Courtney had said. In fact, Courtney's there. Her husband's not crewing her, interestingly enough. He said the conch was blown at 2.04 a.m., thought it was supposed to be 3:04. After several false starts, 2021 Barkley Marathons begins in 1 hour. Oh, okay. Yeah, that's right. You get an hour notice. So you just kind of, you know, sit in bed, lay around, waiting, and then the conch is blown and you get to go. So they had a memorial for members of Berkeley family who are no longer with us. Cigarette was lit at 3:04 a.m. and the race began. And it's funny, Laz, with the smoking. When I went to the Dome in 2014 to do the six-day race, oh my gosh, it was so hot and humid in there. Of course, not like Tennessee and stuff. You know, I live in the desert. But anyways, I ended up for a while, I would do a bunch of laps, and then when I wanted to cool off, I'd actually go outside because the Dome was completely sealed, and it just got really hot and humid in there, especially when in the afternoons we had all these youth leagues playing sports in the middle of the damn thing. So I'd go out, and I would, like, lay on the sidewalk in front of the Dome, and more often than not, Laz would be out there smoking a cigarette. He definitely likes his cigarettes. And it says, the watches were set to race time over a year ago. It's a bit uncanny Laz could predict the break in tonight's rain that is that far in advance. So I think they're probably thankful for that, but I'm sure it's probably a humid mess out there. Of course, sometimes they even have snow there. It says, obviously, you know, I've said this before, for the Barkley, the runners are issued a very standard watch set to race time. No other watches are allowed. This year's watch is a no-frills analog pocket watch. I love that, you know, so you don't get any Garmins, nothing. It's just you and a little watch, and you've got 60 hours to finish. It also says, early happenings. One runner came back to camp 40 minutes into the race because he forgot his bib. Wow, how can you go to that? So that's crazy. So forget your bib, and obviously you need your bib because there's 10 books so that they know you've done the course. You have to go out there and you tear out the page. So if you're bib 13, you tear out page 13, and then when you come back after a lap, you show Laz all your pages, and then you get to go back out and do another lap, and you do it the other direction. So that's kind of how it works. It says travel restrictions. Since the travel restrictions, the starting list is heavily USA, far more virgins than veterans. And it'll be interesting how this plays out over the weekend. Who knows? A lot of times I've seen in ultras, oftentimes the newbies are the ones who do really well. It's just kind of like you don't know what to expect. In fact, myself, now that I have 19 finishes of 100 miles or longer, I'm having a hard time getting to 20. 2019, I dropped out at mile 75 in a 72-hour race, just wasn't having any fun. Then I infamously went to Dome in Wisconsin. Wasn't having any fun. I don't like track races. I don't like indoor track races. You know, you're just so confined. And I watched my friends Anthony and Yolanda get 20 walk 100 miles in under 24 hours. Only was at like 55 miles by that time. Called up my airlines, and I could fly home early, and they weren't going to charge me anything. So I just packed it up, and in fact, when I went back and looked, I was one lap, a quarter mile short of 100K, but I just didn't care. So yeah, that's definitely, you know, sometimes you know, after you've done it too many times, you just kind of like realize, oh, this is going to hurt. This is going to suck. It says that after 5.5 hours into the race, someone has dropped. They don't know who it was or where they are. They have not yet made it back to camp. Somebody named Pete Mortimer was the first runner to face the bugler after an odyssey that took him to the Gobi Church. So Pete Mortimer was the first person. And that's what happens when you don't make the cutoff or you come back and you quit. You get a bugle horn, you get tapped out. So somebody asked, what gift did they have to give Laz this year? And Keith says, moxie. 7 hours into the race, the front runners get the fire tower, points to the 9 or 10 hour first loop. Dave Hughes, the second runner to tap out after getting the first book. Wow. The rain has returned. 3 hours ago, it says rain returned, accompanied by thunder. That's not fun. 10 hours in the race. Nobody has completed a lap. Loop one. Jared Campbell and Luke Nelson have completed lap one in 10 hours, 21 minutes, and 10 hours, 1 second apart. Someone asked, crew, I don't know what happened to my runner. And Keith says, Barkley happened. And so it looks like Jared and Luke began loop two at 10:40 into the race. So they took a 19-minute break, and they were good to go. An hour ago, Keith said it was hailing a few miles from the park, and it's heading that way. Good news for the ladies. No woman has ever finished Barkley, but Maddie Guterall, who obviously won the backyard Biggs race, she and Courtney, Chris Hallen, and Liz Canty all have finished loop one in 10:44 to 10:45. And I think that's really what you need to do, kind of like in the Biggs race, is work together, you know, because it'd be so much easier just to do that and, you know, stay together. And then, you know, it comes down, in fact, it's kind of interesting when if anybody makes it to the finishes four loops, when they go out for the fifth loop, the person who comes in first gets to decide which direction they're going to go. And there's obviously one direction is easier than the other. So you had those guys. Just before them was Frank Gonzalez, Jamil Curry, Wes Thurman, and Scott Martin all finished loops. Jamil, of course, has gone to Barkley many, many times. He's the race director for Air Vipa, which, you know, puts on Javeline and Across the Years and all those other races. So he's back out there. He often writes about his training and what he's doing, all the vert he's trying to do. Looks like he says here, Courtney and them came in 10:45, and then they left at 11:06. So they took about, again, 20 minutes. Maggie, Courtney, Liz, and Jamil, and Frank Gonzalez all began lap two. So it sounds good. And cruising up here, some other people coming in. I'm not familiar with a lot of them. Let me just roll up here. And then let's go back to, let me see here. Sorry about this. Oh, my computer's dead. Top tweets. Yep, it says, girl power. Three of the six are in are women, Liz, Maggie, and Courtney. just rolling along here. Sorry about that. I was trying to get back to the BM100, which is the hashtag for the race, and see what the top tweets were. And kind of like Twitter, the top tweets were either just retweeting stuff Keith wrote or just not really of very interest. So I think I will stick with Keith Dunn's commentary, and we'll do some more updates. But like I said, it is 1 o'clock here in California, so it's 4 p.m. there. So they've been out for about 13 hours. Of course, most of the top people have gotten the first lap done, and they've got 60 hours to do it. Interesting, I remember listening to a podcast a while back where they're talking to the guy, and I'm terrible with the names, but he's finished it two or three times, and they're asking him why one of the things that, you know, makes you that why people don't do so well in this race. He said, well, because you have a lot of really good ultra guys who maybe have done 100-mile races or now even 200-mile races, but they really don't wrap their heads around being out there for 60 hours. They just can't get that in their head. And he says he's the same victim of it. When he runs a 50-mile race, if he's not done in 8 or 9 hours, he mentally gets messed up too. And so it's kind of the expectations. And so the expectation is you just need to be realize you're going to be out there for a long time, and that's just what it is. In fact, when I run multi-day races, like 48-hour to 6-day races, I know a lot of people just don't accept the fact that, like, wow, you're going to be out here for almost a week, so this is your world. And so that's kind of, I'm sure, the mentality. It'll be interesting to see with so many newbies out there this year, and obviously not an international field, but the virgins, be interesting to see how many of them do finish. And I'll plan on doing updates from time to time, maybe every 8 hours, or maybe, I guess, maybe every 12 hours, because it seems like loops are taking 10 or 11 hours. And, well, 60 divided by 5 is 12 hours. So good luck to everybody out there at the Barkley Marathons. I hope everyone stays safe, and I guarantee they're going to have quite a adventure out there. And as always, stay healthy, be boring, not epic. Well, it's about 7 o'clock here in California, 10 o'clock over there in Tennessee at the Barkley Marathons. They started at 3 a.m., so I guess they're about 19 hours. They're definitely in the darkness. Bakersfield gets about 5 inches of rain. Barkley will probably get 5 inches of rain. Saw a report from Ray Kay saying that the storms are finally ending there. When I get back in, I'll be doing a more of an update.
But yeah, it's nice and sunny here. But we got clouds, so it's kind of entertaining that Bakersfield has got some moisture. When I did a 13-hour update, Jamil, Curry, and Courtney had came in about the same time on lap one or loop one and headed out together on loop two with a couple other women. I think Maggie Guderall was with them, and one other lady. And then I saw a report that they were both going up, I think, Rat Jaw together. So good to hear, because Jamil has been out there many, many times, so he definitely knows the course. Jamil's from Phoenix, which is a lot like Bakersfield. Dirt and hot, rocky. And so the East Coast trails definitely got to be crazy for him. Courtney being from Colorado, she's used to big, long climbs in dry conditions as well compared to Tennessee. I used to live back east when I was a kid in Georgia. Suburbs of Georgia. I used to live in apartments like I'm walking by right now. And, you know, if I was this far behind the apartments in Georgia, it was full-on woods. Spin around three times, you wouldn't know where you were. And that's kind of, I always laugh at my West Coast friends because they never know where they are. I grew up back east where we'd go out mountain biking and we had to know, well, actually wasn't BMXing, and we had to know how to get back because there was some dense woods, and that Tennessee Frozen Head is some definitely crazy dense woods. So good to hear they're together. Hopefully they stay together. Be great to see Jamil finally get a finish, and for Courtney to be the first woman to finish Barkley. Besides navigation and the crazy terrain of Barkley, you got to deal with sleep deprivation. That's the biggest thing. You know, you're going to be out there for 60 hours and you got to know how to stay awake. And the good thing is, you know, they started it, the conch shell blew at 2 a.m. So that means you're just kind of laying around waiting for the damn thing to go. And then the race started at 3 a.m. So they're out there all night during the witching hour. And now it's dark again, 10 o'clock for them. We all know Courtney is amazing with sleep deprivation. Obviously the big backyard races, but also when she did Moab 230, you know, she supposedly slept for a couple minute nap and went on and crushed that race. And she's, I've seen at Tahoe 200, her and Jamil both ran really well there. I've spent quite a lot of time with Jamil at Across the Years and various other races. He's a race director, putting in massive hours. And I've seen Jamil sleeping at laptops very often because he can fall asleep at a drop of a dime. But then he can also get up and BRD and all that. So hopefully he has some kind of break and rest so he didn't come into this race so sleep deprived, because I know he's talked about that in the past, just digging a big hole because he's so busy. So both of them will be out there in the dark looking for the books. And I'm sure they probably will finish up the second loop pretty soon and then be heading out for that third loop.
Back from my evening miles, and it is about 10:30 there, hour 20 of the Barkley Marathons. They obviously haven't finished loop two yet. Loop one, which was taking them 10 or 11 hours. So probably in another hour or two, they will finish up. Started at 3 a.m. their time, so they went through one night, and now they're back out there in another night. Keith Dunn has been tweeting quite a bit, and I really love his coverage, considering that there's not a lot of internet. I highly recommend following on Instagram the various athletes, and Howie Stern is out there taking photos. In fact, I follow him on Strava, and he's been putting in the miles on Strava, running back and forth from place to place. So Ryan King DNF'd at loop one and is tapped out. And that was at 12:47. Then Ron Moore also DNF'd and has tapped out. And Andy Pearson has begun loop two. And if you keep going along here, number of people starting the loop two. This one here is kind of a heartbreak. Sounds like me because I'm always missing cutoffs. Jake Rackerton finished loop one just under the 13:40 cutoff and did not have time to begin loop two within the time limit. There are 16 runners on loop two. Everyone else is DNF'd, so 16. Then 4 hours ago, it said that the rain had returned. As I said, I follow Ray Kolitz, who's an East Coast runner, I believe from South Carolina, And he showed a radar thing, and he said there looked like there's one more front, and then possibly they would get some reprieve from these wet conditions. I know Jamil, being from Phoenix, he doesn't deal with rain very much, and Courtney probably deals with snow, but not rain, mud, and just the dense foliage. I just can't imagine. I would just not want to do it whatsoever. Also, 4 hours ago, Keith reported that Maggie, Liz, Courtney, and Jamil have passed the fire tower on loop 2. So congratulations on getting to that. Tano Islo quit in the middle of loop 2 and has tapped out. 15 runners remain in the race. Wonder how you get back to the, I guess you just have to hike back because there's obviously not any other way to get back. He also said that 9 runners remain on loop 1. Frank Gonzalez quit on loop 2 and has tapped out. And Frank said, I knew I was going to fail. I just didn't think it would be so early. 14 runners remain in the race. That probably is a little old there kind of thing. Karen McNary finished loop well over the time limit, has tapped out. 8 runners remain on loop 1 and 14 runners are on loop 2. Oh, so she already missed the cutoff, and there's still 8 more people out there. Like they said earlier, there's a lot of newbies out there, a lot of virgins out there, and so obviously they're having a little bit harder time. Speaking of that, it says here another update. This was just 37 minutes ago. Annie Pearson, Ian Ferris, and Harold Zundel have quit on Loop 2. Shortly thereafter, Hiram Rogers came in with the remaining 4 other Loop 1 runners. Davey had to play taps 8 times. No runners remain on loop 1. 11 remain on loop 2. Boy, that guy's getting some workouts. Almost want to have like a boombox. Then 33 minutes ago, so that would be at about 10 p.m., they report that it sucks. Temperatures dropping and the rain that is not supposed to be here doesn't seem to want to stop. You know, they call it frozen head for, don't call it frozen head for nothing. And I can't imagine being out there in the freezing cold late at night. I'm definitely a desert rat and I like it dry. Ultra Running History is a great website and great podcast, and they have been tweeting out various little tidbits about the history of the Barkley area and Frozen Head. Of course, the race was inspired by James Earl Ray's trying to escape, and it says here, James Earl Ray's thoughts after 54 and a half hours on the future Barkley course. There's wilderness out there. I must have been in places that no human being has ever been. There's heavy brush up there and things like that. And I can attest to that. Like I was talking earlier, when I lived in Georgia and I was in Atlanta, and I just couldn't believe the dense forest. You just don't understand it if you've never lived back east. Of course, my sons have lived here in California. They hardly know what a tree is. I guess James Earl Ray actually tried to escape from the place 4 times, and twice using dummies similar to escape from Alcatraz. The Barkley's Ratjaw portion runs by mine ruins on Frozen Head. For more than 100 years, prisoners were forced to work in these coal mines. Wow, first you're in prison, then you go work in a coal mine. In the mine on the Barkley course in 1933, 882 inmates barricaded themselves in a tunnel protesting prison. Treatment, reaction, so this is 1933, was we'll starve them out. Two later day, they came out, flogging occurred, their leader was falsely declared insane. And then there's been other kind of break-ins. 1957, inmates, 116 inmates took hostage of 4 foremen in the mine, lasted for 32 hours. 11 dynamite booby traps were left behind. 8 ringleaders were flogged, and so much other things. It also says here, Barkley runs through a brushy mountain prison surrounded by mountains called the Third Wall. Many people have tried to escape by going over the mountain, and that did not fare well for most of them. Barkley runners now run on the brushy mountain prison grounds, home of extreme violence for more than 100 years. It used to be a disease-filled wooden 4-story structure, and they actually run in a tunnel underneath it, if you watch the documentary. And it's funny, my wife of 30-plus years, who's known me, and I've been training and running since 1979 for 40-plus years, she hardly knows very much about much endurance sports. She does like watching mountain climbing documentaries, so do I, though neither of us would ever go near a mountain because we're not into snow and cold. But she does know about the Barkley's Marathon. She watched it, was very fascinated, and I think most people are. And it also says here, the Brushy Mountain Prison Cemetery the Barkley runners go by has 400 prisoner bodies buried there. Thus far, we don't think any Barkley runners have ended up there. So that's my report. Like I said, it is 10:40 p.m. on the East Coast there in Tennessee and Frozen Head. There's just a few runners out there now on Loop 2. They're probably finishing up Loop 2 in the next couple hours. And if I haven't gone to sleep yet, I will definitely do a report. Thank you guys all for listening. Please hit subscribe if you can. I'd love to get the support. I'm trying to get to that 1,000. So, you know, YouTube, You know, they used to not put ads on people who were not monetized, meaning don't have 1,000 subscribers, but now they put ads on to the videos, even though I'm not monetized. And I'm like, I always say, you know, if I can get monetized, that'd be great. You know, I'm going to spend the money on my, on endurance sports, traveling to races, buying equipment. In fact, I just did a video about some new ultras I got off of eBay today. So as always, stay healthy, be boring, not epic. Hour 27 update of the Barkley Marathons. It's 3 a.m. here in Bakersfield, California, but it's 6 a.m. in Tennessee, and the 27-hour mark has passed, and it basically is this. Jared Campbell and Luke Nelson have finished lap two in 24:32 and 35 seconds, so it looks they're together, according to Keith. While we slept, Pavel dropped out at lap two and was tapped out with the bugle horns, says Keith says an hour ago. It says, so far, fog seems to be winning the race. It's been a factor in both loops, one and two. Yes, they've had nice wet weather. And, of course, with wet weather like here in Central California, you get the fog. Scott Martin, Wes Thurman, and Nikolai quit on lap two and have been tapped out. Jared Campbell and Luke Nelson have begun loop three. In order to continue loop three, runners have to begin loop three no later than 26 hours, 40 minutes into the race. Jared and Luke are the final two runners. The remaining runners on loop two have timed out. So we are only going to have two people going to maybe get to finish the fun run. So John Kelly, who's obviously done the race many times, says, it looks like no one will make it to the fourth loop this year. The race will be over by 7:04 Eastern time today. It'll be a fun run. Ball Runner says, looks like a really tough year this year. Possibly no one will even get a fun run. Leaders have done two loops in 2:24:50, so under just 11 hours to get the third loop done. No mentions of Courtney or Maggie yet. The other runners on the loop have till 5:45 to start loop three in hopes of finishing. John Kelly also says, if any of the remaining runners are able to start loop three, they should have perfect weather and perfect timing for maximum daylight to complete the fun run. And that's definitely important. With a 3 a.m. start, they went through now the second night. And no matter what, you just go slower at night. And your perception of speed is so off because you don't have things moving around you. Of course, they're going up and down hills. Me, when I've done multi-day races of 48 to 6 days, I'm only going around in circles where I don't really have to pay attention too much. In fact, the great John Giesler seems like he's out there sleepwalking. I often say he's like a dolphin, where they say that dolphins sleep with half their brain shut off. And so John Kelly says, let's go Maggie, Courtney, Jamil, and Liz Canty. 30 minutes to complete loop two to realistically have time to start loop three. I would definitely rather be out there right now knowing either I'll make it or I won't or unsure, but outcome is up to me. John Kelly says his coaching message that he just sent to Magatrons is, if she comes in near the cutoff, throw some little Debbie cakes at her face and turn her around immediately. Don't even worry about batteries. She needs a headlamp again, it will be already over. So that's definitely the case. I often tell my athletes, you know, fight the cutoffs, to go till you can't go anymore. But a lot of people just don't want to do that, obviously. I've never been on the Barkley course. I'm sure it's just brutal. But, you know, it's just kind of go for it until you can't, let the race time you out, or as in this, get the bugle coming. So John Kelly now, a little bit ago, says, unless Keith Dunn is uncharacteristically light with a critical update, only two people will complete two loops within the cutoff this year. I don't even know the last time, if ever, that so few did. And it says, 2021 Barkley Marathons is shaping up to be a perfect encapsulation of 2020. Everything's awful. Showing up is a triumph. And then Keith just recently, a few minutes ago, sent out the tweet that we all did not want to get. Says, Maggie, Courtney, and Liz have finished loop two in 26:52. They are over the 26:40 time limit and cannot continue to loop three. So they missed the cutoff by 12 minutes. So we've got two people out there, and obviously Jamil is obviously missed the cutoff as well. And of course, someone says only 12 minutes. And then Ray Corlett's great ultra runner from back east, who I've got to share my first 6 day race with way back in 2014, says, should be a dry day for all those who have survived to loop three at Barkley. And then, so it sounds like you got the two runners left, Jarrett and Luke. And so out of 40 starters, there's two people going on, and no one's going to get a – the only thing they're probably going to get is a fun run unless miracles happen. Of course, the weather is dry, and they got sunlight. So good luck to all of them. And, of course, Amelia Bruin kind of sums it up with the ladies. She herself has competed at the race, and she says, proud of these three next year, and hopefully next year will be the year we have a woman finisher. We only got 15 athletes have finished it in the past. Like I said, it's 3 a.m. here in Bakersfield. Good thing I don't sleep all that much. In fact, I woke up like perfect time. To give you a little history of the Barkley, it's considered one of the toughest 100-mile races in the world. In fact, most people say it's not really 100 miles, that the laps are way over 20 miles, and I'm sure that's the case, given Laz says there's 67,000 feet of climbing, more than any other 100-mile race, and 33,000 more than Hard Rock, wow, and 45,000 more than the Nolan's 14. Since the race began in 1986, that's when I opened up my record store, only 15 runners out of about 1,000 have finished within the 60-hour cutoff. Some other facts and stuff seems like, someone said this earlier before we heard all this, said Barkley seems pretty vicious this year, and unless Keith is holding out on us, no one has finished two laps yet. Weary cat face looking forward to the race reports. That's the one thing, the BM100 hashtag, a lot of people were posting pictures of cats. I don't really understand why. I'm not a cat fan, I'm a dog fan. And in fact, it was entertaining that the Ultra Runner History guy posted a picture of some bloodhounds that used to try and find the escaped prisoners. And he said, you know, there's been dogs on this course, but no cats. And people were talking about the Barkley math. It, you know, you're definitely probably going to have very few people making the fun run. And Courtney DeWalter's Instagram page, I think, sent out, our Warriors are battling in tonight until rain persisting longer than predicted and temps dropping par for the course, but they don't come to the Frozen Head for the lovely weather. They're here to test themselves and for the snacks. So many nachos are being earned. And so that's kind of the case. And last thing here, they were talking about in 1977, when James Earl Ray was struggling on the Barkley course, the escapee received worldwide attention. About 300 reporters came to the scene. Prison warden said, I've never seen anything more chaotic. Yep, Barkley looks like it's won this year, which it does many years. And thank you all for watching. I will be doing an update on the last two runners, and hopefully they do get the fun run done. You know, who knows? Maybe they can pull it off and get into that fourth lap. You never know. You don't give up until the clock runs out on you. So, as always, stay healthy, be boring, not epic. And thank you all for watching, and please hit the subscribe button. Welcome to hour 36 of the Barkley Marathon's updates. Well, it looks like they might get the fun run done, but probably will not be able to go on to another lap. We're waiting for them. I think the 36-hour cutoff is in about 45 minutes, so it's 2:12 over there in Tennessee. It's 11:12 here in California. So I've been doing updates throughout. I've done, this is like the fourth one, I think. And so I've just been checking out Twitter and kind of going over some of the better things. And of course, first Barkley was held in 1986 with three loops for about 55 miles, 25,000 feet of climbing with a 24-hour cutoff. 13 unlucky runners started. They paid a fee of 35 cents. And of course, later on, a couple years later, it was changed to five loops. And now three loops is the fun run. Jared Campbell said in 2019, Jared Campbell finished loop under 11 hours with a major ankle tear. They have about 10 hours for this one. I believe they can do it. It won't be easy, but I hope they can get the support from the weather, is what one person wrote. And you can see all these tweets and more on my Twitter. I put it on Twitter/AnnieNoise. It'll be in the show notes. John Kelly had some really good observations, of course, and he says, so painfully close, but this is an incredible trio who have great experience on their belts. Sort of density of top veteran talent on the women's side is something that has been needed at Barclays. I look forward to seeing where it leads. Congrats to all of them. And yes, it was a really good performance, and hopefully they'll keep on going. Someone posted this, and it's definitely true. It's especially cute when big names start Barclays and everyone just expects them to finish the first time, like Wardian, like Michael Wardian. Now, of course, I never really thought Michael Wardian would. He's too much of a road guy. And it's interesting in this race, you know, it's not about who really fast top talented 100-mile racers. Because, you know, those guys are done, you know, 12 to 15 hours, depending on it. You know, myself, you know, I've done 19 races over 100 miles or longer. And even my fastest 100-miler is, you know, a little under 27 hours. So I always see a second day. And so for a lot of people, I crew and pace quite a bit, and I've been to a lot of 24-hour races, and you'll see that, you know, the top guys, they get to, top guys and women, they get to 100 miles, you know, 15, 16 hours or faster. And then, you know, to look down the barrel of another 8-hour workday to get to continue on, and so many of them do really fall apart and or just drop out. And I always say, hey, if you're in a 24-hour race, it's the name of it is 24-hour race, meaning you're supposed to be out there for the whole 24 hours racing. And that's kind of like I've said before with Barkley Marathons. It's, yes, it's 100 miles, supposedly. I think it's obviously longer, but it's a 60-hour race, and you need to be prepared to be out there for 60 hours. It's not like you're going to go out there and crush a 40-hour. You know, I mean, I've crewed and paced Tahoe 200 a couple times, and it has a 100-hour cutoff. You know, when they were first running, it was taking people, you know, 60, 70 hours. And now, you know, they're doing it in 50 hours. So they've improved. But Barclays is not going to, that's not going to happen. Plus, I think they're, you know, change up the course to make it a little harder. So it says here, left camp with what should be enough time for third loop, but pretty much no chance for 10 hours. They need to come in sub 36 loop three cutoff required to start fourth loop. So like I said, the cutoff now is in 45 minutes. They should have 14 hours to come in with the fun run with light most there. Third loop. So yeah, they look like they might be able to get the fun run, but we shall see. It says, yeah, we've been spoiled with finishers in the 2010s, with 2020 being canceled. And this will most likely be only be the third consecutive race without a loop five finish. 2018 and 2020 had thunderstorms. I think 2019 had freezing rain and snow. Next year, like this year and every year, there will be Barkley weather. It never not happens. Anyone who thinks this year's Barkley weather is particularly harsh or unique is hasn't been around the race long enough. Same could be said about the start time. Yeah, I mean, they do that often. And, you know, that's the thing is Frozen Head, the weather's crazy there. And it might be a little crazier being that it's March, you know, instead of, I used to always think the race was around April Fool's, but I've never really kept track of it that much. I know when I did my first 24-hour race at Beyond Limits up in the desert up above Palm Springs, up in the mountains about 4,500, 5,000 feet. And the first year we did it was mid to late March, about this time of year. And we went there and at night it got cold. You know, there was frost on the ground. The really thin, skinny guys had definitely problems. And then then the following year, they moved it to early April. And those extra couple weeks make a huge difference in the desert mountains of California. And I'm sure it does make difference there in Tennessee. It says, someone also said, there's not bad weather, just the ill-prepared. They often say there's no such thing as bad weather, just poor equipment choices. This speaks to experience more than grit. Course knowledge. One example, in 2003, Cave Dog blazed through five loops of rain, wind, snow, when almost all quit before three loops. But he trained relentlessly on the course for weeks. The point is, if you're blaming the weather for difficulty, you are not really taking Barkley history into account. It's like saying, man, all that snow really slowed down the Iditarod. So like that. Someone said, go Jared. Barkley has not us not about running. Stop bring up how great elite runners would do. Barkley is all about orienteering and bushwhacking. There is no nice trail to run fast on. That's what makes it great. And yeah, there's all these people talking, you know, bringing up Killian and bringing up other fast runners. But if you look at it, most of the guys, in fact, quite a few of the guys have been like backpackers, you know, long distance backpacking and that type of thing, where, you know, you're just going to be out there for the long haul. You know, you got to know where you're going. You got to, like I said, orienteering. I grew up back east, and I'm so glad I did, because I lived in Georgia, and I mean, it was pretty wild, and Georgia isn't that as wild as some of these other places. And so when I came out here to California, I was just amazed at how people would get lost. Like, we were out here, if you watch some of my other videos, out here at Hart Park, there's not a tree in the entire place. And, you know, it's a big kind of some hills and stuff. And you'd be amazed. We'll go hiking out there and people will get lost. And I'm like, you can see for, well, now because our air quality is better, for hundreds of miles in every direction. In fact, you can see the High Sierras and Mount Whitney from Bakersfield. And, you know, the mountains to the left, it's a big U-shaped area. And I'm always amazed. So that's definitely, being fast is just not the issue at Barclays. Definitely, you know, you've got to be lean and mean, but not necessarily. In fact, this thing says experience is number one. Age is another factor. Barclays is no country for old men. Weather and start time ultimately don't matter. Veteran presence is part of the experience as much as the others listed. Karma and luck are nice, but fate smiles on the prepared. And I know Joe Feges, who I've been at a couple second 6 day races, he's now getting into his 50s. And he's kind of said that, yeah, Barclays just not going to be happening for him. And also what ends up happening is it's not just that you, you know, when you get older, you slow down, but your timing goes bad. And that's what I really have found with my age and, of course, my size. In fact, when I first started getting back into doing ultras in the late 2000s, I kept missing cutoffs. I missed San Diego 100 cutoff by 5 minutes at mile 75 one year. Pretty disheartening, but I had an affinity for the older athletes, you know, guys in their 70s or 60s or 70s, because what happens is you just lose that timing. It's not much, but just enough. And I used to be a big baseball fan, and you can look at baseball cards and you'd see Willie Mays or, you know, other great batters, you know, Hank Aaron and people like that. And they'd be batting 300 for 16, 17 years. And then all of a sudden, season 18, they'd be batting 192. And why? They just lose that tiny little millisecond. And then it's over. They can't hit the fastball anymore. They don't see the curve. And that's what happens when you get older. You just don't pick your feet up quite quick enough, and you end up on the ground. And, of course, Barclay, I can't imagine. You definitely got to have some quick reflexes. And I found when I was younger, my size being 250 pounds, I also couldn't move nimbly. So I had kind of had an affinity for the older guys. And, you know, when we go on these loop courses where we can do them with our eyes closed, the older guys and the bigger guys do a lot better. So that's definitely the thing. Someone else said, Barclay never pulls back. There is also never a perfect run at Barclay. It's always an exercise on how one deals and manages the endless stream of imperfections as the event unfolds. And I've been fortunate the past couple of years. I haven't seen her lately. I hope she's okay. She's been inducted into the Hall of Fame. Ann Trason, she's been trying to do an ultra in every state. And I think the provinces of Canada. And so for a while there, I was at Race for the Ages with her, tons of races in California, and spent a lot of time she out there walking with her. And she often says that ultra running is all about problem solving, you know, and you just kind of got to keep moving forward and figure out and solve the problem. So that's just basically what it's all about. Someone else also wrote, nine finishers in 10 years, 2008 to 2017, was way too much for the Barclay course that is supposed to be on the edge of elite ability. Those zero finish years are necessary juxtaposed against the finished ones. We are overdue for a long drought. Also, there's course knowledge. Course changes from year to year, but it's not complete wholesale change. There are adjustments. Over time, one can accumulate a base of course knowledge that's applicable no matter the year. And that's definitely the case. You often hear people, when they're virgins, newbies, they try and link up and stay with someone who's been out there and do it. That's why I was really glad to see when they went out for lap two that Courtney and Maggie and the other gal were with Jamil, because Jamil's been out there a lot. So he knows those woods and definitely was a help. And in fact, they ended up finishing lap two a little bit before him. So that's definitely a thing. It says, based on what I know of the Barclays, I'd say the ability to run fast is actually quite a ways down the list on things that will contribute to a runner's ability to finish. And I can definitely attest to that. When I do multi-day races, even 24-hour races, it's not the fastest people who do the best in the 24 and definitely 48 and 6 day. You know, you can have all the foot speed in the world, but, you know, I've podiumed in 48-hour races, and on a good day, I couldn't break 6 hours in a marathon. I mainly am a walker. Now I'm almost completely a walker. But in 48-hour races, I've won a couple in California. I've come in third. I mean, I got 138 miles and won a 48-hour there at that Palm Springs race. Guys had 15, 20-mile lead on me after 24 hours, but then they went to bed. I went to Across the Years and did 137 and got up third place male, fifth overall or something. And I went to the BB Farm 48-hour race and got a third there. In fact, in that race, I wasn't doing too well, but it came down to the last hour. I thought I had a 2-mile lead on the guy, and it turned out I only had a 1-mile lead, and it was a little less than a mile loop. And so for the last hour, he was chasing me hard, and I ended up doing my fastest 5K of the year at the end of a 48-hour race, and ended up beating him by 60 yards. And, you know, and this guy is probably, actually, I saw, he had Boston Marathon shirts on. He runs Boston Marathon every year. But, I qualified for it when I was 20, when I ran 250, but now I couldn't break 6 hours. And then one of the things I really like about Twitter is John Kelly came on, obviously one of our finishers, and he said, this was kind of entertaining. He said, my time as most recent Barkley finisher will now have at least outlast a presidency, a pandemic, hopefully, and the entire Brexit saga. It's nearly the same age as our twins who start school this year. I think the Barkley course needs term limits. Dave Horton said, had a quote that captured a sentiment that was something like, at Barkley, it's not enough to be good at running fast. You also have to be good at running slow. There are many talented fast runners who won't be able to do this. And then, of course, I want to finish this up with John Kelly came in and did a 5-part tweet. And you can see in my show notes, if you go to my Twitter /AndyNoyes, retweet all this stuff. And so you can just kind of see it there. I really wish that Twitter, you could like adjust the timeline so it goes from oldest to newest instead of newest down. Maybe it is. I don't spend that much time on Twitter. So John Kelly says a few Barkley misconceptions that he's noticed. One, the race requires mental toughness, but you can't simply tough it out. Failure doesn't mean you weren't tough enough, and being tough enough doesn't mean you'll be successful. Okay, and there's some people out there who say, if you're just tough enough, you try hard enough. Well, no, and that's probably why those guys don't show up at Barkley. Two, conditions matter, but they'll never be perfect at Barkley. Swings from frozen solid water jugs to scorching hot in 12 hours. That's just Tennessee in March. I've had fierce storms from nowhere, fog from everywhere, and starts from 1:42 a.m. to 11:20 a.m. Someone thinks that Barkley finish requires good conditions, they've already failed. Bad conditions most affect those who had no chance to begin with. Energy must be focused on things that are actually controllable. Definitely true. Three, yes, the Barkley course gets tougher. So does our gear, our training, and our collective experience. It's a delicate balancing act to keep it just at the edge of possible and stretch us out fully across our spectrum of possibilities. And this is completely true. I mean, now, you know, at your fingertips, you can find out all the latest technology, training methods. You can see it in high school milers. For a long time, there was only like 4 or 5 guys broke 4 minutes for the mile. Now, there's 1 or 2 every year. We've already had one kid do it, high schooler, and there's a sophomore, a junior, who's going for a sub-4 now, tonight, I think, or this weekend, and he ran like 4:01 as a sophomore or a junior. Why? Training's better, food's better, altitude training, the equipment, don't even get me started on the super shoes. Those super shoes wouldn't help you at Barclays, but they definitely help in the marathon. I mean, just, so yeah, the course has got to, they got to tighten it up, just make it so, you know, it is a challenge. That's the reason why 15 people have only finished. And that continues on. He has it become too hard? That's been asked often in the last 30 years, and that's where the opportunity lies. Doing what couldn't be done carries for far greater appeal than defeating something already conquered. Barclays requires that motivation, as all great goals should. And then it's kind of it's very interesting. Like, you know, some people, I think they don't really get the spirit of this. This one person wrote, this truly saddens me. Two exceptionally gifted runners and badass women that I admire greatly. Conditions must have been crazy at Frozen Head. I long to see a female finished in this race. My hopes were that these two would do it. It's like, I don't know, it's just weird. It's just like for years, I used to go to Cross the Years. And I remember one year in particular. And the 500-mile mark in the 6-day race is pretty impressive. I've talked to people, and Tishrell Churns, and he told me when I was at that race in Vermont that only like a dozen North Americans had done 500 miles in 6 days, and he did it twice. And then, of course, my friend Bob Hearn did it at the Dome in 2019. And, you know, so he's only like the 13th, 14th person to do it. And it's funny, but like, I remember the last time I was at Across the Years, you know, one, I'm there all the time, and I've done 300 twice, and it's always amazing. So many people think they're going to get the 300, and even 300 is hard. But one year, the last year I was there, there was like 8 or 9 guys who I know who all thought they were shooting for 500 miles. And this is after Churchill told me about how only a dozen people had done it. And I looked at these guys and I was like, okay, in the history of the event, hundreds of years, they did six-day races professionally, making tens of thousands of dollars in the 1870s and the 1880s. In all that time, only a dozen men have done this. And I think actually in that dozen is one woman. I'm like, okay, so if only a dozen people have done it in 140 years of this race, why in the world are 8 or 9 guys going to show up in the desert of Arizona and do 500 miles? Just statistically, it makes no sense. It's like, just do the math. It's like, no, you're not gonna. You know, and a lot of those guys, they went out hard, blew up. And then I remember some of them coming back and going, oh, you know, I'd like to get the 400. And I remember one of my friends coming up to me after the first couple of days. And he's like, oh, you know, like, oh, I could get to 400, but I got to do 100K a day. You know, and usually 100K wouldn't take me, you know, 12, 13 hours. But he goes, I'm walking. And he's like, so it's going to take me like 20 hours. And I was like, well, welcome to multi-day racing. It all comes down to 3 miles an hour. And that's on a pancake flat course. And so, you know, he ended up not getting 400. I did 300 or so and moved on. So it's just kind of people have some seriously real unrealistic expectations. And lastly, I'll end it up here. Someone else tweeted, Barkley marathons are 87% running, 76% mental strength, and 94% what the hell else? And the pie chart would make as much sense as a map you're given to copy before the start. Well, I think it's a lot of it's mental, it's training, it's preparation. It's all those things going together. And that's why this race keeps everybody's attention and is such an amazing race. Like I said in a video before, my wife of almost 31 years, and I've been racing since 79. I got married in 1990, and she knew me a year before that. And she's been around the sport of endurance sports, you know, triathlons, ultras, marathons. And she listens, but she doesn't really pay attention. She doesn't care much. But, you know, she happened upon the Barkley Marathons documentary, and she enjoyed it and totally understood it. And she, even her, realized like, wow, this is a crazy, hard, difficult event. And it's great to have things out there in the world that, you know, failure is almost assured and success is so difficult. So thank you guys all for listening and watching the videos and for your support. Please hit the subscribe button if you will. And as always, stay healthy, be boring, not epic.